Welcome to the French Connections Special Sunday Edition. My name is Daryl Bradford Smith, and today's date is November 26th, 2006, and you are listening to the French Connection. And again, it is great to have you here with me today. You know, I have done a few files in the last few days here, very important ones. We've talked about a myriad of subjects, and in fact, yesterday, or day before yesterday, I called for the dismantling of the Jewish Zionist state of Israel.
Oh, yes.
And I also called for the Pakistanis to provide nuclear bombs to the Iranians to protect themselves from the Israelis. Now, whether any of those things will happen is a billion to one shot, but you know something? In the right world, in a good world, in a fair world, the Iranians would have every right on earth to protect themselves from these criminals in Jerusalem and in Tel Aviv. However, we don't live in a just world. What we know is we live in a world controlled by deception and lies, and we live in a world where the human life is of little value to the people that are in charge of our world. And so what we're going to do today is bring up someone who has been a part of the French Connection for a long time. He's one of the leading researchers in the last 100 years on this subject. His name is Eustace Mullins. He's a friend of mine, and I couldn't be prouder to have him here with me again for another installment of the French Connection. Are you with me, Eustace?
Oh, yes, indeed.
Well, it's great to have you back, Eustace. Do you find any resistance to the things I just said about providing protective devices for the Iranians? I mean, don't they have a right to protect themselves from these criminals in Israel?
Well, Israel has the greatest atomic weapons collection in the world, so the whole world has to protect themselves against them.
Well, because they've got the Americans with their weapons behind them, don't they?
Well, now there really is no Israel. It's just an American front.
See, that's important to understand for people. And when you take a look at how the Congress has been bought and paid for, and we here at the French Connection have done a lot of research on how these people become compromised in our Congress, Eustace. We know that they use pedophilia, they use homosexuality, they use, of course, bribery and extortion, and then they use their friends. And are all of those things well used by the controllers to keep congressional committees and everything in check?
Well, the whole legislative process in the United States over the last 100 years has been more and more bureaucratic, more Byzantine, and more hidden from the people. It's everything in Washington is an elaborate shell game.
Mm. Don't they use the things like pedophilia to hold people in check? Because we've found so many. I mean, look at this guy Barney Frank out of Massachusetts. He had a 15-year-old prostitute living in his Georgetown flat, and he was getting this 15-year-old to run out, and they were doing tricks and everything. I mean, this is a leading congressman with a Harvard degree using children.
Oh yes, I've been doing that for years. I think that started in the Roosevelt administration in 1932. Because you see, you had widespread poverty, and so when it came to buying bodies, they were very cheap.
But didn't this also get proliferated when Hoover was in the FBI? Because he was a creepy guy doing some strange things as well, wasn't he? Sexually, he was a very bizarre man.
Well, you know, in 1955, a Nation magazine, which was the leading intellectual Marxist magazine in the world, did a series called The Home Intern, which described a international homosexual community which operated everywhere in the world and had its devotees. It was like the Communist International, but it was just Home Intern. And that was very prevalent in Washington.
Well, it seems like they get the biggest support financially from the Jewish supporters in the background is these ultra liberal homosexual politicians. We've got this guy from New Jersey there, the governor, and then we've got this new guy from Florida there that just got caught being a homosexual. I mean, they're all over the Congress.
Well, they're all over the Congress, and everybody in Washington's known that for years. Now, when I was on Capitol Hill in the 40s, there was practically nothing of this going on. What was going on at that time was that the most powerful senators in Washington had sons 40 or 45 years old, and these sons of these senators were cruising Lafayette Park every night and picking up soldiers and so forth. and it was very well known. There were newspaper stories at that time, but that was considered the extent of the homosexual operation. Now it's a homosexual all the way.
Well, yeah, and George Bush, it is said, has had a visitor by the name of Jeff Gannon visit his White House, over 200 visits, many of them at night, many of them in the private quarters, and many times he didn't leave the White House. In other words, he signed in at the Secret Service entry desk, but never signed out. And he is a known male prostitute in Washington, D.C., as well as a website promoter of porn, of male porn. And he was given a false name and ready access to the White House's inner corridors. Now,
He was a favorite there, Johnny Gosch.
Well, do you think he was Johnny Gosch? I don't think he was.
Well, people from New York told me that, and they seem to know what they're talking about. They told me this 3 or 4 years ago. And I,
well, he doesn't have the same look, and the mother says that it isn't him.
Oh, she does say that. Mm-hmm.
I talked to Noreen Gosch about this. In fact, I've talked to John DeCamp as well, the guy that blew the cover on that Franklin cover-up with Larry Franklin out in Omaha. And we've got Warren Buffett involved in this kind of depravity, and it even went into the Reagan White House, this kind of sickness.
Oh, it did indeed. They came in with those neocons from the Hoover Institute at Stanford University, and they really parked themselves there. They've been there ever since.
Do you know much about the Stanford Research Institute being an arm of the Tavistock Group, using information from Tavistock? Because Tavistock is where much of the disinformation hits the airwaves. A lot of the stories come out, and a lot of the manipulations on television come out of Tavistock. Do you know anything about that group?
Oh, yes. I've written about it in my book, The World Order, because the Tavistock Group, initially, they were to control bureaucratic officials, and they moved in on the university officials, and all the foundations were Tavistock people, and so they established a little monopoly of their own there, and that's continued to the present day.
And are they involved in what goes out on our television airwaves? Because if you watch recent, in the last 5 years, the series of television programming has become darker and more ominous and more sick, and it's all about the end of the world. It's about 6 feet under grave shows. It's about dead like me being a dead person coming back to life. It's all about sickness and death, and it's really shifted in the last few years. Now, there seems to me that there's a concerted effort to write scripts that are focused on very sick themes.
Oh, that's very, as a writer, I've noticed with incredulity that the only writer for many years has been Stephen King. And Stephen King is a hack writer of the lowest order. And he started turning out this craft to frighten children, you know. And it was the most moronic stuff I ever saw in my life. And this one suddenly saturated the airwaves of Stephen King's stories. It published... They ran them over and over all day and night.
Well, they've got lots of Stephen King types of things now, and I'm wondering if it's not to ready the population for these dark days. I mean, you would come to expect that this was the next phase in your life. These end of the world kind of shows, and after Armageddon, and how do you survive? And it's just horrendous programming, and it's actually making its way to the French airwaves now.
Oh, it is, for heaven's sake. Well, yeah, I wouldn't think anybody in Europe would pay attention to this nonsense because it's for 4 years old. It's the boogeyman, you know, and they really saturate the television with it, and it's been going on constantly, and it gets worse all the time.
Well, isn't this what Myron Fagan was also alluding to in some of his lectures that he talked about?
Oh, yes. Myron knew this was going on because he was in with the top screenwriters in Hollywood, and he was one of those prolific at all. I don't know what programs he anyway, he came up with a tremendous distaste for this sort of thing. He suspected what they were going on, what they were trying to do, and he began to resist it, and they finally ran him out of Hollywood. I knew him in his last years in New York, and he was a hunted man.
Well, you know, the interesting thing is they've spun the idea that that aliens are actually in existence, which is really foolishness beyond anything. And you know how many hundreds of millions of people in the world believe this crap? And I'm wondering, Eustace, do they have an intention of using the idea that we're being invaded somehow? Did they get the idea from H.G. Wells? I mean, do these controllers really think someday they'll be able to use, let's say, oh my goodness, the world's being invaded by aliens or something?
Oh, well, H.G. Wells was the originator of all this stuff. He was just an English hack writer, but he came up with this idea of invading the world from outer space, and it caught on. It's been going ever since because it's inexhaustible. You can, you know, there's a billion planets out there, and they're all going to invade us at some time or another, so...
But see, Eustace, here's the interesting thing. They've got people out there like David Icke, like Jordan Maxwell, like what's his other guy's name? They all mix up a little bit of this truth. Some of it's true what they say, and then they sprinkle in, much of our DNA is alien. And so in other words, they try to marry truth with absolute foolishness.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It's very foolish, and it's really, I know all these people, and they've been ludicrous to me ever since I've known them, but they keep getting away with this crap. It's incredible.
Well, isn't that why, a website, for example, Jeff Rentz puts out a lot of important information, but then in the next article you read on his website, he'll talk about taking a vacation to Mars or how the dark side of the moon has a city on it. And so on his website is this powerful truth mixed with this absolute nonsense. And you say to yourself, anybody who's new to this who would read it would think that we're all crazy.
Oh, yes, because there is absolutely no evidence for any of this. It's just a fantasy, sure fantasy, and they deluge people with it until they begin to... I guess it all started with Buck Rogers in 1936.
But why are they marrying facts about 9/11 with it? They're marrying facts about the conspiracy of the Jewish supremacy and the Zionists with it. They're, in other words, they're putting in truth with this nonsense. I think it's specifically to make us all look like we're crazy.
Well, and to believe crazy things, because when you start believing crazy things, you'll believe anything. And the idea of evidence or proof just vanished into thin air. It's no longer required anywhere.
Well, I've had people actually write to me on my email arguing with me that the world is flat. And that can you imagine this stuff? And I tell you something, you know, when you get stuff like this, and the people, I'm convinced some of these people believe this nonsense, one wonders how far down we have sunk as humans when masses of people are so dumbed down, Eustace. You talked about it in other shows we've done together. What have they done to make us all dumb as fence posts?
Well, they locked up the only intelligent man in the United States, who was Ezra Pound, and they put him in an insane asylum. And then they let everybody know that if you say talk any sense to anybody, then we're going to put you in the insane asylum. In fact, J. Edgar Hoover issued orders in 1959 that I be committed to a mental institution. And, of course, everybody ignored him because he had no such power.
Well, how about the use of drugs and chemicals in our water and the rest of it?
Oh, that's omnipresent. They use that all the time. In fact, the godfather of modern military science was the president of Harvard. James, I've written about him in my book. And he became a Gauleiter of Germany after we invaded Germany.
Now, he knew about what? Using chemicals to control mass population?
He is the one who was commissioned by Winston Churchill in 1942 to put together an anthrax bomb which would exterminate everybody in Europe. And that was his job, and he did it. But
who are those two Jewish brothers at the Rockefeller Institute in New York that designed a lot of stuff? They came in after this polio vaccine, and they were instrumental in getting a lot of grant money to do research on mass population elimination and stuff. Two brothers, I forget their name.
Three Jewish brothers. I can't think of the names at the moment, but they were employees of Rockefeller. One of them
That's
was
right.
the head of the Rockefeller Institute of Medical Research, and
That's
the
right.
other two helped get revolutionize the medical care industry in the United States.
That's right. And they were instrumental also in saying, suppressing evidence that fluoride in water was poison, and instead of doing regular science on that stuff, they used junk science to say that it was good for teeth, didn't they?
Oh, yes. They said it would absolutely eliminate cavities. And, of course, every parents of children, as the children get to adolescence, they all have cavities. And so these people came along and said, we'll relieve mankind of this problem forever. That was a promise that they held out. And, of course, it's totally useless. And there was never, to this day, I quoted one congressman in my book, Murder by Injection. He looked into it, and they found that there was no evidence for any of this stuff. So he went after him. For the next thing, he was a congressman from Kansas, and the next thing you know, he was out of Congress.
He was a civilian looking for a job. Well,
oh, yeah.
They don't end at the fluoride either, do they? I mean, look what they're doing with these other drugs.
Well, they're doing it. They've got so many that you can't keep up with them. They're working all the time. The Rockefeller Group, I joked years ago that all of the drugs that the Rockefeller Group was producing were based on petroleum. And I said the human system was never intended to run on petroleum.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's interesting that Prozac, I believe, and maybe somebody out in the listening audience can correct me if I'm wrong, has a base of several chemicals, one of them including formaldehyde, and also there is some fluoride in there as a stabilizing agent inside of Prozac, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, they've got those stabilizers and everything. It's usually mercury or its a derivative. And that's what really does the damage, because when you get mercury into your system, you can't get it out.
Yeah. So basically, they've given us a cocktail of lies in our press and in our entertainment. They've dumbed us down with drugs and chemicals. They've fattened us up with hormones and hormone-laced milk. They've destroyed our immune system with antibiotics in the beef supply by giving it to beef cattle and to cows. And basically, so we're just sitting ducks for the end here, it seems like.
Oh, we are, because the American Medical Association, you know, I went to the Library of Congress in 1950 to look up whatever historical research there was on the American Medical Association. I found out that the Library of Congress had none. That's why I wrote my book, Murder by Injection. Because all these years that the AMA had been the most powerful lobby in Washington, there was never any book written about them. They operated in total secrecy.
And how much control does the AMA have from Zionism and Zionist control?
Well, Fishbein was the head of it for many years. You know, he ran the whole show, Morris Fishbein, and he himself had no medical training. He was strictly a Jewish entrepreneur that did it all with chutzpah. He went to medical school in Chicago briefly, and they flunked him out. And the rest of his life, he spent pretending to be posing as a doctor.
And wow.
And he became head of the AMA, and he ran it as a one-man dictatorship.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Eustace, when you get outside the United States, you start understanding that, well, here in France, for example, if you go to a pharmacy, most of the choices you have are between homeopathic cures that are natural-based, whether it be herbs or whatever, and they have a whole section of it. And they also have cures that are more Western-based medicine, but the doctors here are trained to use both. And it's amazing that in America, it's usually the most up-to-date poison that they find.
The latest thing off of the production lines.
Yeah.
And they're like carnival barkers, because everything they put out, they say it cures everything.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and the other side of it is, you know, they're getting people on these cholesterol drugs, I just read this article about there's no evidence that cholesterol is behind all this heart disease and stuff.
Oh, absolutely not. Most of the heart disease started with the after World War I, when the war ended and they no longer had any market for it. And the manufacturers were stuck with tons of chlorine, and they finally put it in the drinking water. They claimed it would purify the drinking water. Of course, that's when everybody started having heart attacks. Men started falling over like crazy in 1920 with heart attacks, and they couldn't figure
out. From chlorine.
Yeah, from chlorine. Well, chlorine is a very dangerous poison. You shouldn't use any chlorine on your house at all. It's used generally as a disinfectant. They use it in all the hospitals, of course. And some of the chlorine derivatives that they're using in the hospitals have been proven to be very dangerous and have been banned.
Well, and you know as well as I do that I've turned the tap on in some cities in America. I'll give you a good example. In New York City or even in San Francisco and Los Angeles, you can smell chlorine coming out of the tap.
Oh, yes. It's everywhere. Because
so,
they use
so
it for everything, an all-purpose medication.
Jesus. Well, you know, and here's the other question I got for you. You know, you know as well as I do, if they started, I'll tell you something, if they started putting me on mainstream television as a spokesperson for the facts, if I were anyone else around me, I would immediately be suspicious of the things I say because the mainstream media would never put someone on if they were not controlled or if they didn't want their message to be controlled. Am I correct in that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's a dead giveaway when a person starts appearing on national television like Billy Graham or Pat Robertson, the biggest phonies in the country. Because right away you know that they own them and they've bought them. And you can't believe one word they say.
Yeah, and I've noticed that there's some of these talk show hosts who've made it onto radio shows like Coast to Coast, which is owned by Clear Channel. And you know Clear Channel is a company owned by Zionists, and also Sinclair Broadcasting, another one owned by Zionists. And I don't know. I mean, when you see people on these networks, you got to be these guys like Fetzer and the rest of them. They're all pointing to Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld. Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld. It seems to me that they're setting Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld up to be the bad guys here, and behind the scenes, all the real bad guys are going to get away with it.
Oh yes, they're just cover stories for all the crimes they're committing, and so Rumsfeld is the new evil person. And he's going to walk away free. No one's going to do anything with him. That's why Bush relieved him right away because he's on the way out. They're going to take care of him.
Yeah, and it seems like what we've got here is just a changing of the guard. But really, the palace is still run by the same crooks. And behind that is this guy, Rahm Emanuel. We did some research on Rahm Emanuel. And could you tell us about what you know about Rahm Emanuel's family and his father?
Well, he's out of Chicago, and he's a very powerful. You know, Chicago was the headquarters of the World Mossad operation for years. It was financed through the Department of Public Works of the city of Chicago. And they put 10,000 fake workers on the rolls of the Chicago Public Works, so that money financed Mossad all during the 1940s and 1950s.
Hmm.
And finally,
and it was Rahm Emanuel's father that was involved with it?
Oh, he was right in the middle of it. He and the Crown family, Henry Crown, you know, the munitions maker, they were behind everything. And Jake Arvey. Jake Arvey was the boss of Chicago for years. And now
Rahm Emanuel is like the heir apparent to this criminal enterprise?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, how close is he working with people like Chertoff and the rest of these crooks?
Well, I don't know because they work secretly, so obviously you.
Well, I mean, from what you can glean from just looking at events.
Oh yeah, well they do a lot of traveling around and a lot of speaking. Well, the main spokesperson for years on national television has been Billy Crystal, whose father, Jonathan Crystal, was a noted Jewish socialist in New York for years. And Crystal is the godfather of the whole neocon movement that got us into the Iraq War.
And I filed
legal papers recently that I'm drawing up Nuremberg charges against the neocons for the Iraq War. Plotting and planning and waging aggressive war. This is a Nuremberg standard.
Well, now, we know that Rahm Emanuel's connections go into the Clinton White House because he was one of the main aides of the Clintons during their criminal stay in the White House. Are they going to try to resurrect the Clinton dynasty to continue their criminal activity?
Oh, they're hoping to. They're still hoping to get away with running Hillary in 2008. But the problem with that is she is so universally hated that they'll never be able to put her across. They can raise all the money in the world. When she was reelected senator from New York, she had more money than she could spend. It was all honest money.
Yeah. Well, what is her connection to Judaism? Her family roots are Jewish, actually.
Oh, I heard that for years, and it probably is true. Because whenever you see a meteoric rise like this of an absolute nonentity from nothingness, and the whole national media is 100% behind her, there has to be more to it than appears on the surface.
Did you look into William Blythe, Jefferson Clinton Blythe, and his connection to Rockefeller?
Oh, yeah, because there's no doubt that he's from the Rockefeller family there in Arkansas. He's very close. Bill Clinton's uncle was one of the top people in the Hot Springs Mafia. The Hot Springs Mafia is a branch of the Chicago Mafia, and that ran everything in Arkansas.
And they used Arkansas as a jumping point for their drug shipping through the 80s, didn't they?
Well, that's why it became the central shipping point at Mena, Arkansas.
And because Bill was protecting that stuff.
Oh, yes. And Oliver North, you see him on television constantly. He always has a program going. And he was the manager of the Mena, Arkansas operation.
Yeah.
And he presents himself as a Marine, a good American, you know. I've been on the same speaking programs around the country with Oliver North, and he gets mobs everywhere he goes. He gets plenty of money. They love him in Texas.
They do they?
Oh, yeah. The Texans really think Oliver North's the greatest thing that ever came through the door.
How do they get, you wonder, they vilify people like you, like me, like Eric, like Christopher Bolin.
Yes.
We're all vilified over here. We're swimming up against a torrent here, and sometimes, it gets so frustrating when they're giving their accolades and their buy your leaves to all these crooks, and they're stopping us with terrible, I'm attacked every day someplace.
Oh, yes. It's a barrage of propaganda that never stops. And it is infuriating. It's not frustrating. It's just infuriating to think that people would be so dumb as to endorse these Rockefeller agents.
Now, was Rockefeller really put into the money by financing from old Europe and Rothschild money? Wasn't his original fortune? Yeah.
He was a $10 a week bank clerk in Cleveland, and the idea that this man could suddenly develop the greatest monopoly in the world is just absolutely ridiculous. It was all done by Jacob Schiff, and Jacob Schiff actually grew up in the Rothschild home in Frankfurt, Germany.
And he was sent over to America to do the bidding of Rothschild in the 1890s, wasn't he? Wasn't he given the challenge of getting people to agree to the Federal Reserve System? And didn't they run a scam on Pierpont Morgan and wiped out his money? And Morgan ended up going along with it because he had been completely wiped out. I don't know. I heard a story that Morgan was completely destroyed by these Rothschilds. And at the end, he had nothing. He was broke at the end.
Well, he wasn't destroyed by the Rothschilds. He was created for them. He was a Rothschild agent from the very beginning. He was hired by George Peabody, a Rothschild agent in London, and the Morgans were absolutely nobodies. And they created them out of nothing, just like the new Federal Reserve money.
Hmm.
So the myth of Morgan as the world's greatest capitalist and the world's greatest banker, that was all manufactured by the Rothschilds. There's nothing to it.
Hmm.
And he never had any money at all. I think when he died in 1914, they claimed at first he had $50 million, and they said it was $14 million. And his son almost had a nervous breakdown when he realized Morgan Jr., when he realized that his father was almost bankrupt. And he became permanently depressed, and he had trouble ever since.
Now, did Carnegie and Vanderbilt and all these other crooks, were they all put into place by the same group, by Rothschild?
No, they created themselves. Carnegie and Vanderbilt created their own fortunes because they went into growing industries, transportation and coal and so forth, that made a lot of money. Now, Jacob Schiff didn't create those people, but he did create the Harrimans and he created the Rockefellers and a lot of the bigwigs today.
Well, they ended up stealing the fortunes of the Fords. The Ford Foundation is in the hands of these criminals now.
Oh, yes, they took it over.
It didn't start that way, did it?
Oh, yes. And in fact...
It didn't start out that way, though, did it? Because Henry Ford was against these. Yeah.
But, in fact, that is why they had to create the John Birch Society, also out of nothing, to get over the fact that the Ford Foundation and the other left-wing foundations had all been created by Jacob Schiff. And so they started a new group, which is going to be very anti-communist, called the John Birch Society, and that was created by Nelson Rockefeller. And he bought the Welsh Candy Company so that Welsh could spend all his time running his fake organization. And Revlo Oliver, one of the founders of the John Birch Society, when he found out what was going on, he quit. And so Rockefeller offered him any amount of money if he would stay with them. But he walked out on them.
Are there clear-cut ways of telling whether organizations have been formed or are in league with these crooks? Somebody sent me information about there's a torch. You'll see it at many universities. Torch.
Yeah.
Does that indicate allegiance to masonry or B'nai B'rith or something?
The torch
of knowledge, they call it the torch of knowledge.
Oh, yeah, that's the torch. That's the Illuminati. It's a bad word for the Illuminati because it sheds off light, and that's why you have understanding and knowledge. And it's all Freemason.
Find some of your most important universities. I'll give you an example. I think New York University has a torch as its symbol, and so do many universities. Yeah.
You see it all over New York. In fact,
you do.
You see torches on the facade of many buildings in New York that are built in the 1880s and 1890s. There's a torch on the side of the building. But
and that's Freemasonry and Illuminati?
Oh, yes, that's Illuminati 100%.
Now, Illuminati is Weishaupt, and Weishaupt was given his financing through Rothschild back in the 1770s, 1760s, yeah?
Oh, yes, came right out of Frankfurt, yes.
Now, he was given a task to ship a bunch of teams of people to America. One of them was the New Bohemians. Do you know any information about the New Bohemians and how they came over and set up Masonic lodges on behalf of Weishaupt and the Illuminati?
I don't have any direct information, but this was a trend which is going on. It was at the maximum at that time. They started setting up these community towns and community workshops, and they were all pure Marxist.
Yeah.
And they were Illuminati all the way.
Well, the Marxism, why they love it so much is because all the control is at the top, and top control means that they can eliminate their enemies with ease and control almost like a feudal system where they become the lord of the land and everybody below them has to bend to their will.
Oh, yes. It's a total dictatorship. And what they call the common people, the average person, has no input in any decision whatsoever. He just takes orders, and he's told everything to do.
Well, you know, for the first time, see, they made a mistake, Eustace, and we've talked about this. I think a couple of shows ago we discussed it. They didn't realize when they were putting this Internet together just how powerful a source of information it would become. And they've made a real blunder with this thing because it has had, found a life of its own here. And I think they've made a big mistake because more and more people are waking up around the world to the crimes of this group.
Oh, yes, because I think that most people that know my name today know it because of the Internet. And before the Internet, I couldn't break through anywhere. I was under total silence.
Well, when I remember the first time I talked to you and I told you we were getting 10,000 people to come and visit the site in a day, and you said, wow, that's, you know, we never got that kind of traction back years ago. And I've got friends in London and up in Scotland who have written a lot of books. One of them is a guy named David Pidcock, and another fella named Colonel Barry Turner. They said, you know, if we got 200 or 300 people back 15, 20 years ago, we were doing good. And he said, but this Internet has really helped us.
Oh, it has. It's just mushroomed. It's a miraculous thing because it didn't exist before. Back in the 50s, you were lucky if you could have a meeting of 5 people in one of the big cities, Chicago or New York. You never got more than 5 or 6 people. And now it's just stuff is just absolutely saturated everywhere.
Well, this was the technological shift in the world that we were all waiting for.
Oh, yes.
So that these crooks could be exposed, yeah?
Oh, yes. Well, it's long overdue, but it's doing its job.
Well, it is. And you and I talked privately before this show that I said to you, you know, it's not happening as quickly as I'd like, but I'm pretty sure these people are losing.
Oh, they're losing. There's no question about it. They have nowhere to go. They're not only losing, but they have no future. They have nowhere to go. Israel is at the end of a rope. There's no question about it. In fact, all that Israel had was their control over the American people and using the American armies and military might. They started off with Israel. You know, the Arabs thought they could just wipe out Israel in no time. And Forrestal stripped the entire military power of the United States to equip Israel, and that's how they beat the Arabs. Because nobody believed that Israel, little Israel, had a chance against the whole Arab nations. And, hell, they just wiped them out with this thing. It's the same thing we're doing in Lebanon. You had the Israelis murdering women and children with the latest fighter jets and the most powerful military force in the world. And they went in and murdered thousands and thousands of in fact, they just about wiped out Lebanon entirely.
Yeah, well, see, how do they sell this sickness? I mean, don't the Israelis, because, you know, the Israelis can go on the Internet, too. Aren't they reading how sick their leadership is? Or are they so brainwashed in Israel that they don't know that they're sick as they really are? I mean,
oh,
come on.
Oh, they have no idea. The Zionists have no idea of the fact that they're absolutely criminally insane. And these people have to be eliminated for the safety and security of the entire world.
Well, criminal Zionism is such a cancer, Eustace, and it has metastasized, because if you take a look at countries like Argentina and Chile and Paraguay and Uruguay and Colombia, and they're all controlled by criminal Zionists. Even in Africa, when you go to Zimbabwe, and I mean any place that you go where there's a lot of wealth, or there's drugs, they're involved.
Oh yes, they're running the whole show. And the people who live there have no clue as to what's going on. They don't have any idea who's actually running the show.
Well, I mean, they don't even know in most Arab countries that their governments have been compromised. In Jordan, for example.
It's incredible, because you'd think that somebody would know what was going on, but they seem to have not a clue.
Well, take a look at Jordan, you know, with Abdullah and his father being a Freemason.
Oh, yes.
And you know that Freemason network in the Middle East is set up by the forerunners of World Zionism, which was the B'nai B'rith group, but it was before that the old man in the mountain and the assassin groups and stuff.
These were all
inspired through Judaism.
The assassins were always the backbone of the Middle East. It's assassins everywhere. That's their code of government.
Well. You know, I mean, back in the 60s with Nasser and all the rest of it, and when Saddam Hussein was actually put in jail for an attempted murder, and then he was mysteriously let out of jail. This guy has been an asset from the beginning with the CIA and the Mossad.
Oh, he's one of the most loyal assets. I can't understand how they could put Saddam Hussein on trial for working for the CIA for 34 years.
It's amazing, isn't it?
I mean, he's due a pension. That's the only thing that he's due.
to his pension. Well, you know, and you have this. See, and you have these countries like. Let's take for example Pakistan, with this guy Musharraf. Of course, you know he's bought and paid for.
Oh, absolutely! Everybody out there is.
Well, it's interesting that their military is so loyal to the criminals. Well, you would think that they would wake up at some point and say that we're working for criminal Zionism in the world, not Islam and Muslims. How can they keep such a well-oiled military so duped?
Well, you don't dupe the military. The military obeys the superior officers who pays them. When you go and get your payroll at the end of the month, you do whatever they tell you to.
So they're just basically a mercenary army.
Oh, absolutely. I always had some doubts about George Lincoln Rockwell, who was supposed to be influenced by me, but I went up and worked with Rockwell and lived with him and everything else, and I could never see anything serious going on there. It's just a charade.
Well, what was he doing? What was his story?
Oh, well, you know, he was the son of one of the most famous radio entertainers, Rockwell, and so his father had plenty of money, and he was just a spoiled guy.
Yeah, and what were you working with him doing?
Well, that was when he had the American Nazi Party. They created the American Nazi Party because Nazi was the most hated name in the world, and so by creating something like that, they had instant pandemonium in the United States. And Nazi
now, was he working for the Zionists?
Oh, yes.
He was.
No question about it. Because nobody ever knew where a penny of Rockwell's financial support came from. There was no wealthy person behind him at all, but he had plenty of money. He could buy houses, and he had a staff there. He had 30 or 40 people living there. And all the time that I knew one fellow who helped him somewhat, a wealthy man named Harris Smith. But he wasn't the chief financial supporter at all. He was just held for the ostensible person who was backing Rockwell's operation.
Now, they have a long history of creating the opposition so that they have an enemy to point to, just like terrorism.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And it seems, yeah, now they create the false, fake anti-Semitism and then turn around and say, look, they're trying to get us.
Well, that's absolutely true. In fact, whenever they call a person an anti-Semite, like myself or you, they're going after their enemy. It's an enemy that they've created themselves. It doesn't exist in the first place.
Yeah. It's worked pretty well, hasn't it?
It's always worked. That's the amazing thing, because they can depend on the knee-jerk reaction of every Jew in the country whenever you call a person an anti-Semite. Well, that person, every Jew attacks him immediately because that identifies, that names the enemy, and that they must go after him right away.
Well, I believe that even the Jewish community is starting to read the facts on the Internet. I believe that rank and file Jews in all parts of the world are starting to understand in some small way that maybe what they believed may not be entirely what's right.
Well, the Jews have been the most con people of all because
Jew
has been totally conned by the Jewish leadership.
That's right. Yeah.
And
they seem to be the biggest victims because in their name, all of these awful things are being done.
Oh, yes. And they're getting full blame for it, and there'll be retribution against them. Every Jew realizes this, that retribution is coming for all the stuff that the Jews have been accused of, whether they did it or not. And, you know, the entire Nazi movement was financed by two Jewish bankers, Oppenheimer and Warburg, in Hamburg, Germany.
Yeah. At the behest of Rothschild, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. That was a Rothschild operation. And there was no real anti-Semitism among the German people.
Now, have you heard of the Honig family of Austria? Honig?
Oh, I've heard of Honigs for years, yes.
They're part of the Federal Reserve ownership as well, aren't they?
Oh, yes, certainly. They were in on the ground floor.
Because I know that there's only three or four families that that the Rothschilds intermarry with. Schiff, Warburg, Oppenheimer, and Honig are the ones that they actually allow their daughters or whatever to marry in with.
Oh, absolutely. And they have been consistent over the last 200 years in that.
Yeah.
So when you, you hear that name, honey, you know that that's part of the operation.
Well, I was looking at the present list of Fed governors, and I saw, of course, I saw a Schiff on it. I saw a Honig on it. I saw, you know, and you see these names, and you say, oh, boy.
Oh, yeah.
How about Reynolds? How about R.J. Reynolds, the cigarette fortune? Are they connected to these crooks, too?
Well, they've always been controlled by them, because when they made a lot of money, the Reynolds family, and they're still an important family in Virginia and North Carolina, when they made big money, they were controlled right away, because you see, they always had to have money managers, just like they hired the Bush family to manage the fortunes of the Harriman family after they got Union Pacific Railway.
Mm.
They moved right in on them, because they say, what are we going to do with all those hundreds of millions of dollars? Oh, we'll take care of it for you. And Rothschild did that with the Elector of Hesse in Germany when they financed the Revolutionary War against the United States.
Yeah. Now, the Bush family, there was a new Bohemian named Solomon Bush that came over at the urgings of Rothschild during that formation period of some of the Masonic lodges. And there was another Bush, too, that came over. Are they related to the Bush family?
Well, it's all part of the same family. They go way back, and they were well-known. They've always been in this up to their ears. They've never had any independence. They're just employees all the way.
Yeah. Back through Prescott Bush. This whole thing is so transparent when you look at the research, but the research is very hard to dig up and hard to find. If you go to a local library, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, it's very obscure. Takes a lot of digging.
Well, you know, every time we do an interview together, Eustace, there's a little more that comes out. There's a little more knowledge that we share. I don't get that you know, we're going to get these people anytime soon. And I wonder if they really care very much how much about their operations we know. Because it seems like they're still trying to do this criminal war with Iran. And don't they care that we're on to them?
Oh, well, it's been published so many times that this whole thing was a domino operation. They're going to take care of Iran, Iraq, and Syria, and finally Saudi Arabia. What they're really after is the Saudi Arabia oil fields. That's the prize. And they're going to keep pushing until they get it.
Now, what is that reasoning behind that, so they can keep their dollar system alive?
Well, that's part of keeping the world economy, counterfeit money operation and circulation.
Because it is petrodollars that forces the rest of the world to do trading in dollars. I mean, in other words, if they control all the oil markets, the world still has to participate in the dollar scam, don't they?
Oh, yes. And they have to control the Arabs because they're too hard to keep working. And they've been wanting to get rid of the Arabs for years. Shimon Peres boasted they were going to kill every Arab in the Middle East. And they've been working at it, and they've been very successful.
Well, now, how much of this goes back to the city of London? Now, we know that their management system is in London and that the main Zionists don't live in Israel. They just control Israel from the outside.
Oh, absolutely.
Is London where they live, or are these people living worldwide in different places?
They're worldwide in different places, but London, the London Connection was the subtitle of my book, Secrets of the Federal Reserve, because the London Connection controls everything out of London. It's like British Secret Service. You know, British Secret Service executed the Bolshevik Revolution in 1917 in Russia. It was purely a British operation with no Russians in it whatsoever.
Is that how they inserted those 4,000 Jews as top management people within Russia?
That's exactly right. They were there waiting to be called. They were there to start to work at any time, and it was all done by British Secret Service out of the Bank of England.
How did this group get selected, the Ashkenazi group, to be the because they're not originally Jewish, they're converts to Judaism. How were they selected as the supremacist group?
Well, they've always used what they call conversos, or converts, as the real operators. These are people that are on the make, and they're looking to get into operation. And so they always get conversos, or converts, to do the dirty work.
But see, Judaism, its origins, of course, go back thousands of years, but the Ashkenazis go back to 750, 800, according to author Kessler. And the fact is, how much Sephardic participation at the top is there?
Well, there's not a whole lot. It's Ashkenazi.
It is mostly Ashkenazi.
Absolutely. Because the Sephardic Jews were considered a higher type of Jews. They are very, very ancient Jews, and they have codes of honor and so forth. So the Sephardic were never allowed to be running the show. It was always Ashkenazi. And that's why they used the name Nazi as the Nazi party, as their chief spokesman.
Because it was Ashkenazi.
That came right from Ashkenazi.
Everyone always thinks it's because it's the National Socialist Party or whatever.
Well, that was nothing. The National Socialist Party was nothing. It was seven people after World War I that Hitler got together and built the so-called Nazi Party. It was created out of nothing.
You know, the intrigues. Now, as we take a look going forward here and we take a look at the next steps, are these people that are involved here willing to use the ultimate weapon of nuclear exchange, or are they reluctant to go that far?
They're not reluctant to do anything. These are people who are totally ruthless and will do anything to achieve their ends.
But wouldn't that destroy them too?
Well, it would. You see, that final weapon is also very risky, because you run the risk of, they've soaked the whole Middle East in depleting uranium now, and it may not be happening for thousands of years.
Yeah. Well, some say a half a billion years.
Half a billion years. Oh, it's a very alarming statistics coming out. And that's all been done deliberately. So they must figure there must be some antidote for it, some way they can go in and reclaim those lands after they've been destroyed.
Amazing, isn't it? Well, you know, Eustace, as usual, our ramblings today went into almost every subject you could think about.
Well,
however,
not ramblings at all, because everything is interconnected.
And it's a story.
Oh, yeah.
And the reason why Eustace, I tell it like a story because people will remember it better like a story.
Oh, yeah. You know, Ezra Pound told me when I started writing the Federal Reserve book, he said, you've got to write it like a detective story. Sherlock Holmes.
Well, that's why I tell it like there's so many disparate parts here unless we help people connect the dots around the world, we're not able to get the full picture, you know?
No, that's absolutely true. Well, in all of my research, I realized that everything is interconnected and that one thing is going to lead you to further revelations. And that's what's inspired me all these years, because it gets more fascinating. And yeah, you're progressively dealing with a smaller and smaller group of people, so it gets easier all the time.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you for sharing this 50-minute interview here. You know, you've done a series of talks on this on the French Connection with me, and I got to tell you, I don't think anybody's putting out better stuff in the world than you and I. And I don't say that as a boasting point, but rather as an opportunity for the listener to understand that this stuff is not our musings. I've looked into this.
This is not, they always say truth is stranger than fiction, and there's absolutely no fiction to any of the work that we do.
There isn't.
We're revealing to people what is really going on, and they need to know that, because you can't live in this world and not know what's going on.
At your own peril. And see, the sad part is, Eustace, because so many people are unwilling to take a look, you've even told me there's members in your own family that don't want to look at this. I've got the same problem in mind. There's so many people that because they are afraid to look at the facts, they're going to end up getting me killed.
Well, and my family realizes what I've been through in the last 60 years, and they know that if they show any interest in this whatsoever, they're going on the same road that I am. They just don't want to endure that.
Well, yeah, some people ask me, in my family, why don't you leave it alone? What, are you crazy? You must be a glutton for punishment. No, that's not it at all. I figure, Eustace, if this world's worth living in, it's worth fighting for.
It is worth fighting for, and honor and integrity are the only things that count.
That's right.
And if you're going to try to bypass those, well, you haven't got a chance.
You know, one of the things that I've tried to keep on my website lately is trying to keep people not taking the low road on things like using filthy imagery or disgusting stuff, because this imagery that they're shoving down our throats on television and movies and everything, they're taking people's politeness and destroying it. We're turning into a bunch of rude, crude, disgusting animals. And I don't want to use that, although I understand it. I mean, I've been living in the same world they have. I don't want it to be part of my message, because what it does is it really soils the quality that we could have.
Well, it really does. And, you know, Ezra Pound, who was my mentor, he never used the low road at all, because he always had the highest quality of information that he could get to tell people. And you could always rely on that. And you don't want to give that away by going the low road and joining these Zionists and so forth in shouting imprecations to each other and filthy names and so forth. Because that recently happened with the so-called comedy routine in the comedy club in California.
Yes.
One Jew started being heckled by a couple of black people because they loved to heckle the comedians.
Yeah.
So he blew up. He lost his temper and he started screaming at them and so forth. Which is what they want.
That's right. They want vulgarity, don't they?
Oh, absolutely. And they want to drive you crazy so that you go berserk and start shouting crazy stuff. And then they can take you apart.
But you see, when you watch television today, these sickly, sickening music videos with these most, they look like filthy gangster, dirtbag, awful people.
Oh, they really do. The hip-hop people.
Oh, they and it's somebody you would not want to be bumping into in a dark street.
Oh,
they
gosh,
look like gangsters.
Oh yes, they're purposely dressed that way. They look like very dangerous people.
But the fact is that the people who promote them and control these media conglomerates are Zionists.
Oh, they're Zionists, and it's all controlled by Time Warner Corporation out of New York City.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And it's by design, isn't it?
Oh, absolute design. And it makes money and increases their power all the time.
Well, that's why I don't want to participate in it. And I mean, you know, you see this show called, South Park. South Park?
Oh, yeah.
South Park, of course, there are some humorous things in there, and I have to admit it. However, in every show, in every instance, they use vulgarity for a message, and I don't want to relate any my message to vulgarity.
Absolutely not, because it destroys the power of what you're doing.
I think you're right. Well, Eustace, again, as usual, it's been an enlightening time with you. You know, I'm sorry we were supposed to do this earlier in the week, but we had a little blip in our planning.
Well, that happens. I'm always expecting that.
Well, you're still supposed to be coming over here when you get yourself settled. So.
Oh, definitely. Oh, they're working on my passport now. I think that's going to be coming through pretty soon.
Well, good.
I got a congressman working on it.
Well, then you're going to jump on a plane and come on over sit at the farm and eat some dinner at my table.
You see, they found out what they did. I wondered why I never did get my passport when I sent them a $67 check to expedite it within 2 weeks. And 4 months went by and I never saw the passport. And I finally found out from the passport office somebody had taken my application out of my envelope and they left the check and the color photographs and my old passport in there. And they put a fake return address in this envelope from Phoenix, Arizona. And that's why I never heard it from them. I got the passport because they had put a fake address in there from Phoenix, Arizona. And they got, that was the obvious excuse. They didn't have to send me anything. And they told me, this congressman, the first thing he found out was he said, you sent them the wrong address. I never sent them any address at all. This was deliberately inserted in the application so that I wouldn't get the passport.
You know, well, and we know that they listen to our phone calls, Eustace.
Oh,
we know
they
this.
Do indeed, yes.
Yeah. Well, hey, I don't say anything on my phone calls that I won't say to them into their faces. How's that one?
That's right. That's the way to go.
Well, anyway, until the next time, Eustace, I want you to be well, and you know that you can always find me when you need me.
Oh, very good.
And I'll be calling you soon, sir.
Oh, very good. I look forward to it. Because
thank
we're coming
Eustace.
From good ground here.
You bet we did. Thank you so much for being on the show today, huh?
Oh, you're welcome indeed.
Bye-bye now.
Goodbye.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's Eustace Mullins, friend, researcher, teacher, patriot, honest human being, good friend. Glad to have had him on once again on The French Connection. Until the next time, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Daryl Bradford Smith, saying be well. Bye-bye now.